Welcome into the Nuts on this Thursday afternoon. Terrific show on tap. Former big league pitcher Josh Towers is going to join myself, Amal Shaw, of course, alongside Mike Palm. The Palm Reader ready to rock and roll in the playbook in about 15 minutes. Had a terrific winner yesterday on the Milwaukee Brewers, cashing plus 180. We'll get into that in just a minute. But for a lot of people, Mike, in South Florida, they're going to have an opportunity to follow your plays actually in their home state potentially soon, as the Seminole Indian Tribe could be looking at getting sports betting there very shortly.
Boy, you could speak to this more than me, but the Seminole Tribe, very powerful, been very successful in the gaming industry, and obviously it's a great partnership with the state of Florida, and could be very impactful in the Southeast, particularly in your home state.
Yeah, absolutely. It would be great if they got it down there. You know, the Seminoles are tremendous in terms of the power that they wield there outside of Tallahassee on Saturdays at Doak Campbell Stadium. They do a terrific job everywhere else in terms of what they're able to do. So we'll pay attention to that. That could be big news for a lot of people down there that have an interest in betting. You have a lot of New Yorkers that have relocated down there. There's a ton of people that have interest in it. Obviously, huge from a collegiate standpoint when you look at the number of teams that are there. Hurricanes, Gators, of course, Seminoles, Knights, and you've got in Tampa, USF there as well, along with FAU, FIU. So tons of teams, lots of fun there. Something to pay attention to for a lot of people in that part of the country. Do you think it'll have an impact overall in terms of some of the other southeastern states?
Yeah, well, I mean, Georgia, I think it probably has the biggest impact on Georgia. And it all depends on how these states write their rules, right? Yeah. I mean, some are very restrictive. Some are very open to mobile. Some want to say you can't bet on the college teams in that state for the first few years to monitor. I mean, that would be devastating. I mean, that's the whole state, right? I mean,
absolutely.
There may not be a state that has better college athletics. I think you could argue Florida's the best.
I would agree with you for sure on that one. You're right. Let's go to the NFL draft, Mike. I want to talk real quickly about two guys who are really making some noise. Justin Fields coming out and talking about the fact that he has epilepsy. I don't know if it's necessarily going to impact his draft status because he said it's been under control and there's a potential where as he gets older, it'll dissipate or completely evaporate. So from that perspective, it looks like he's trending in the right direction, but there's speculation he could still go to San Francisco at 3. Right now, when you look at the draft prop here at Circa, you have him over 3.5, minus 220, so he's expected to go 4th or later based on your projections here.
Yeah, exactly to go 3rd on DraftKings, and obviously when you're looking at these markets, you want to compare the different books, right? Exactly right. To go 3rd, he's drifted up to plus 175. We saw 2 days ago, they were even. Mac Jones and Justin Fields were both even money, plus 100. Yesterday, Jones went to minus 125, Fields plus 125, drifting again now to Jones, minus 167, Fields plus 175. So the presumptive thought there is Jones is going to be the one. And if you think that Fields is not going to go third, you can lay the 220 that's over 3.5. Why is it more 220 instead of like the other way, 67? Well, obviously there's a chance he could go second too, right? We've heard people make the argument that he's that much of a generational talent and he has the highest ceiling of all these quarterbacks. Maybe there's a chance the Jets would take him. So that's why there's the variance in that price.
Absolutely right. You mentioned that Mac Jones, the other one, looking at potentially landing number 3 in San Francisco. Right now, the over-under on him, though, is 9, because if he doesn't get selected by the 49ers where he's projected to potentially land, then where does he wind up? There's a lot of speculation that other teams could potentially move up, but Trey Lance becomes a player that's in the mix. So he could have a free fall if he doesn't wind up at number 3 in San Francisco.
Well, when you sit there, if you think the Falcons are just going to draft and they're going to take the pick and maybe they take the tight end Pitts, right? And the Bengals take an offensive lineman, then who's going to take the quarterback? It's not going to be the Lions, right? They just got Goff. Dolphins seem to be set on 2, and maybe they want to go down, right? They want to trade back even further. Panthers have 2 quarterbacks already. And so then you get to the Broncos, and that's why they set it at 9, obviously, because Broncos obviously are in the quarterback market.
Yeah, you mentioned the Panthers. I like the fact that they're going to have a real competition there. Teddy Bridgewater, they bring in Sam Darnold. He'll have an opportunity outside of Adam Gase, who somehow continues to get recycled. But now they'll realize that maybe Sam Darnold might be able to play a little bit. We'll find out under Matt Rhule, who did a terrific job in the first year. Remember, for people that are unaware, in the draft last year, they went complete defense. Team improved. McCaffrey was out a little bit due to injuries. They're getting better and better. We'll see what they can do long term.
Yeah, I think the long term plan there with Rhule is a positive one. I think that most folks around the league think he'll be able to turn that around. Obviously, at some point, they're going to have to address a quarterback situation long term. McCaffrey is a key element in that offense and the versatility that he gives it. They play in such a tough division is one of the negatives on that side.
Just from your individual perspective, does the draft matter to you when you look at teams? I know you know the Los Angeles Rams are not going to get any better because they already have Matthew Stafford. I figured you'd take a shot at me. I'd save myself that. But when I look at certain teams, if you have a key addition of a Kyle Pitts who could be an immediate contributor, some of these quarters may not be, so that's just something to consider. This is the Nuts. I'm Amal Shah alongside Mike Palm. We've got a terrific show on tap today. We've got Josh Towers with us, former big league pitcher, World Series winner with the 2009 New York Yankees. We'll get his perspective on what's going on with the San Diego Padres. Now, 10 up, 10 down. Mike Palm told you yesterday, take a look at the Milwaukee Brewers plus 180. Easy winner in that one. We'll get into that matchup at Dodger Stadium coming up this weekend, starting tonight at the Ravine. But Mike, before we get into all of that, I want to get back into the NFL draft. Looking at, for you, can an impact be made by a player in the top 10 that changes your perception of a team as we go towards the season?
Yeah, I think you made the excellent point. Are they going to be impactful year one? And when you look at it, you're looking at obviously from a team win total perspective when you're gambling, or from a yes-no playoff perspective, or if they're a team that's already competitive, maybe a division winner perspective. A lot of these quarterbacks probably aren't going to get time. You know, who goes third has been the big debate here. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to play the whole year unless he gets injured. 98% certainty for the 49ers.
He's
right?
The Carson Wentz of the West Coast.
Yeah. Right. So you're right, though, about Pitts. Pitts could be an immediate impact player for one of these teams, and maybe if he goes to Atlanta, he can make an impact. Although, you know, geez, I think they really need to address the defense because all they've been doing is drafting skill position players around Matt Ryan for many years.
Yeah, I think they're trying to go Big 12 here, just outscore everybody and hope we have the ball last and we can convert late in the game. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I look at some of these players out there. Ja'Marr Chase right now, projection over under 6.5. Over is plus 180. Under is minus 230. Does he go to Cincinnati, which you and I don't believe
no,
he does?
No,
he's not going to Atlanta,
no.
And we feel the first three teams are going to select a quarterback. So is he going to the Miami Dolphins?
That's the only place he could go.
But don't you think if you're Miami, unless you grade Ja'Marr Chase appreciably better than DeVonta Smith, you take DeVonta Smith because of the familiarity with Tua Tagovailoa. They played together for three seasons. Remember, forget the fact that DeVonta Smith won the Heisman last year. His freshman year, he catches the big pass against Georgia on second down and 26 to win the national championship. Tua to DeVonta Smith. You want to see that again if you're in South Florida, if you're the Dolphins.
I think that one of the interesting things of this draft is how DeVonta Smith is not regarded as the top wide receiver. And yeah, you have an opportunity to take a plus price that he would be the first wide receiver taken. I mean, I still think sitting the year out there doesn't do any favors for Chase. And you're right. The familiarity with Tua is obviously something that's not, it's not an unknown. You know that he's going to give Tua a certain level of comfort. You saw Tua struggle to throw the ball down the yep. field last year. He became a check down Charlie type of passer. I mean, his average pass attempt only went like 6 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. So a lot of stuff in the backfield, a lot of check down stuff. So I think he could make an immediate impact with Miami.
You know, to me, when you look at it, I thought Sarkisian did a tremendous job of putting DeVonta Smith in situations where he could utilize his speed. He's a terrific receiver, great hands. He can do everything. And I can appreciate the affinity for Ja'Marr Chase. I don't think it should be as much of a gap between these two guys as projected that Ja'Marr Chase is a lock to be the first receiver taken. You look at DeVonta Smith had a historic season, first wide receiver to win a Heisman Trophy since 1991 in Desmond Howard at Michigan. I think he's a guy that could have an immediate impact, especially if your offensive coordinator decides to utilize him in a similar fashion. I know it's not going to be as easy at the NFL level as it was at Alabama because you're just far superior at the other 10 positions on offense compared to the defense. But I think, to me, he's a guy that can really make a difference. And the other thing I like about him, he's got a personality or disposition similar to Marvin Harrison. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who's pretty quiet. You don't see too much of a diva mentality from him. He's going to come out there, he's going to play hard, and he's going to be an effective player for you.
And you saw him perform big in the biggest stages, as you said, in the national championship games.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Ohio State, you know, great job by them putting a linebacker on him. That was some brilliance right there. Got to thank the Buckeye Nation for that one. So, to me, when you look at it, it's going to be interesting. And Jalen Waddle, I think this is a guy who might have been the first receiver taken if he didn't have the injury. To me, I remember this kid. He's out of Texas. He's unbelievable. You can't tackle him in a phone booth. Waddle, 11.5 over-under. I think it'll end up being over simply because of the injuries coming off of.
Yeah, think about the receiving core that they've had there in the past couple of years. And, I mean, LSU competed right with them as well. So, I mean, the SEC fans were just really blessed the last couple of years to be able to see those kind of offenses perform when for years we, you know, saw the 9-6 and 6-3 games between those teams.
Yeah, absolutely. The classic one that you're referring to. But it's going to be interesting. I think any team's going to do well with any of these three guys. It remains to be seen which one they decide to select. But I think for the Miami Dolphins, it just makes sense if you take DeVonta Smith. So for me, that play on Ja'Marr Chase over 6.5 plus 180 is a pretty solid one. Because if Miami doesn't take him, I don't see him going anywhere else inside the top six, so something to pay attention
to. Well, when you can grab that kind of a price when it's so heavy the opposite way, I think it's worth a play.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest difference when you look at it. Let's switch gears a little bit now. Let's go into the NBA, Mike. Before we get into the games today, got to go to the finish last night in Philadelphia. Chris Paul, one of the best free throw shooters at the foul line. Line, depending on where you got the number, 3, 3.5. If you got Chris Paul on the free throw line with 0.87 seconds left, you feel pretty good about your chances.
Yeah, and he didn't just rattle it out. He was well short with that, with that shot. And an incredible effort for 90 feet from Embiid that did rattle out on the other end. But we talked about this on the money line, playing this game on the money line with Phoenix.
Well, because we thought if Embiid goes, you might have an opportunity to maybe make a hedge there in that scenario. And this game at 3 gets a push here at DraftKings on that number. Total was 217, gets over that total, winds up at 229. Joel Embiid, though, for people that didn't see it, go online, wherever you check, YouTube, what have you, Twitter. He takes the rebound with 0.8 seconds remaining and one-hands it in from inside his own paint and bounces. It goes off the backboard and rattles in and out of the rim. I mean, it would have been one of the most prolific shots in the history of the NBA, and that's not hyperbole in that sense. It was unbelievable. The presence of mind, though, to get it and take the shot. You know what most guys do? They take the dribble so they don't go into their stats with the missed three-point shot.
That's a great point. He was able to step into it and throw it almost, you know, like a baseball pitch or a deep out. But it's so hard when you have so little room for error. I mean, there's millimeters room for error when it's coming in at that kind of an angle.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. I mean, it's got to be right on line, just bounced out a little bit. Unfortunately, didn't materialize there. But depending on, again, where you got the number, Phoenix still continues to play well.
What an impressive start to this road trip.
It really is. They beat Milwaukee in overtime. They win a tight game against Philly.
I asked you yesterday, did you think it would hurt them that they won the close game against the Bucks the night before? And you said no, you thought it would actually give them more confidence, and you thought they had a better chance, and you were right.
Well, you know, once a week, I'm right.
No, you're pretty good with situational handicapping in the NBA.
Tonight, we got a game. I don't know if we're talking about this game because it involves the Phoenix Suns, who are playing as well as anybody, or our producer's favorite team, the Boston Celtics. But this is going to be an interesting matchup because Boston has been playing well in all seriousness. They're at home now, and I think if you're Boston, this is a good measuring stick for how good you potentially can be. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. More importantly, this is a chance for them to sit there and say, hey, we're going to be a contender in the Eastern Conference. We can play with anybody. When you look at Phoenix and what they've been able to do throughout the course of this season, it would give them a tremendous boost from where they stand mentally. Phoenix, for people that are unaware, just a half a game back in the loss column of the Utah Jazz for that first seed. And Boston right now trending up. They're sitting in the sixth spot, but just one game behind right now and two in the win column, tied with the loss column with the New York Knicks to potentially get to the fourth seed and host games in the playoffs.
Yeah, we talked about that being their ceiling to be the fourth seed in the East. And then we thought, well, maybe they're a 7 or an 8 seed. They've seemed to put it together here of late. These teams played before in Phoenix. Phoenix beat them by 9 on February 7th. Here's the thing for me. I can't bet this game till I know who's playing. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Kemba Walker, all day today. So again, in the NBA, we don't know what the lineups are going to be until they throw the ball up in the air.
Yeah, you mentioned Jaylen Brown dealing with the shoulder issue there. Just something to pay attention to. I think that's what's become so hard from a handicapping standpoint. I wish the league would really look at, and I'm not sitting there saying guys don't have injuries to deal with. If you have an injury, absolutely sit out. But when players are just missing due to load management in a 72-game season, and outside of the Lakers and the Miami Heat who went to the finals, I don't get some of these other teams like the Clippers. It's not like Kawhi was leading them to the conference finals last year. If I recall, they were blowing 20-point leads against the Denver Nuggets.
3 of them.
Yes, exactly. I mean, so to me, it's really frustrating from a betting standpoint. We talked about it yesterday. It was expected that Embiid would not play.
Correct.
He ends up playing in that game. And you've got to kind of be prepared that some of these bets you make, and that's why I think sometimes the money line comes into play in some of these matchups. Right now you see the Suns 1.5-point favorite in this game on the road. You got to take the money line here because it gives you an easier hedge opportunity as the game progresses in case you feel like, well, you didn't expect Jaylen Brown to play or you thought he might play and he doesn't end up playing. So much of that is going on constantly. In terms of betting, it makes it very difficult.
I like it. Depending on who plays here, I like the Celtics in this spot, actually. I
think it is
you're asking
spot,
a lot for Phoenix to do here, to go to Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and then to Boston. It's just sort of a setup spot. Boston's rested, right? It seems that they're ready, and this is a good spot for them. And I'd take 1.5 here.
You know what? I can appreciate where you're coming from. Tough game. Back-to-back tough games. Overtime in Milwaukee. A hard-fought game. Win by 3 last night. 2 games on the road. You won by 4 points. You got a little bit more of a rested Boston team at home. this could be an ideal spot for them. And if you like Boston, to me, I would forego the point and a half, take the money line. And one of the reasons why I always bring up the money line a lot, Mike, you and I talk about this off air because we do this constantly, but it gives you great opportunities, particularly in the NBA. Let's say the C's jump up by 6, 7, 8, 9 points. You don't like the way the game is trending. Boston shooting 60%, Phoenix 40%, but they're only up 7, 8 points. You say, okay, you know what? Let me kind of get off this play partially. You take Phoenix plus 250, 270 on the money line. You hope Boston wins. You cover your bet and make some profit. If not, you break even.
Right. You can take it for a fourth of your bet just to cover your bet, and then you're free rolling on the other three quarters.
Absolutely right. So I think sometimes it's very a good play to consider, particularly in the NBA, because it's generally a game of runs throughout that. Speaking of runs, let's see if the Philadelphia 76ers can muster a run tonight in Milwaukee. Bucks have lost 6 games in a row at home. They've got an opportunity now against this 76ers team. Tobias Harris is going to be a game-time decision. Ben Simmons is going to be a game-time decision. I tell you what, everybody's a game-time decision when this one. I'm sure the coaches are going to be game-time decisions as well as whether they're going to show up or not.
Interesting trends to the total here. 76ers 10-1 to the under on their road games, their last 11. And the Bucks 8-1 to the over in their last 9 home games here. So you have a conflict here. 225.5, we see the total. 8, a big number here. We're assuming Philadelphia off the back-to-back and then may not be at full strength.
Yeah, remember last night, no Simmons, no Harris, and of course, no Curry. Mm-hmm. All three of those guys potentially expected to miss. Now, they're listed as game-time decisions. I just feel like they may not play here, but the one thing to keep in mind, if you're Philadelphia, this is a very, very important game. Milwaukee, 3.5 back in the loss column, or 3 back in the loss column, 3.5 overall. If they were to win this game, they've got another game coming up against Philadelphia. They could cut this thing back-to-back Thursday and Saturday, both in Milwaukee. If you are the 76ers, is your goal to get 1 out of 2 games in this series?
You have to, right? Because you're trying to maintain that 2. And, oh, by the way, you still have a shot at the 1 with the Nets struggling, right? So what's happened here with Milwaukee is remarkable. I mean, it's opening up like the Red Sea. They could come in here and actually steal the 1 seed in the East again, which I never thought could happen 3 weeks ago.
Nobody's talked about it. I think they've been an afterthought. But what's interesting is the odds makers still list Milwaukee as the second team out of the Eastern Conference. Are you a little bit surprised by that?
That's why I think there's value in betting the 76ers.
I'm with you.
Because when they're healthy, because I don't think the Nets are ever going to be fully healthy. I don't think you're going to get the big three, even in the playoffs. I think there's question marks. Durant and now Harden re-injures.
Yeah.
So I really like the 76ers to come out of the East. I don't want them to have the 3 seed, though, and have to win at Milwaukee and potentially at Brooklyn.
Does what they do this weekend, let's say tonight you don't get Harris, you don't get Ben Simmons, and Curry doesn't play, but these guys play on Saturday and they still lose the game. Does it change your opinion at all if they go 0-2 in Milwaukee? These are regular season games. They still maintain a 1.5 game lead over the Bucks. They could potentially still wind up as the 1 seed. Does it change your perspective on Philly at all?
No, not at all. I think Philly is who we think that they are.
I'm with you.
I do. I want to get them to a 2 seed. They need to have. I don't want to have to win 2 road series here. Have to go to Milwaukee and then potentially come right back and play 2 long series in Brooklyn and Milwaukee.
I think that's an excellent point. Right now, you look at the Sixers championship odds 12-1. I think probably outside of the Lakers, no team benefits. Maybe Brooklyn, you can make the case for, benefits more than having the game on Monday, game on Wednesday, game on Friday scenario in the postseason more than the 76ers.
I think they benefit more than the Lakers. I think they need the rest. The rest with their team. That's the way they sort of put this franchise together like this, right? So I think they have a lot of potential here, and I still think that they're the best value, even better than getting the Lakers at 3-1 when you can get them at 12-1.
Yeah, I got the Lakers at 3.2 or plus 320. I still think it's a good shot with the Lakers, but I'm with you. Philadelphia still 12-1 to win the NBA title. Good opportunity if you like them there. Speaking of the Lakers, Anthony Davis returning tonight for the Lakers. Big news there, Mike. When you look at the stats with this team, you look at the record with him in the lineup, without him in the lineup, it's been an appreciable difference in what the Lakers have been able to do. They are in Dallas tonight. They take on the Mavericks. Just before you get excited about Davis coming back, remember, he's probably only going to play about 12 to 15 minutes tonight, limited minutes probably for the first several games back.
It's tough for me to wager on Mavericks games. And you follow more than I do, but they're so Jekyll and Hyde. It's hard for them. They play a good game, they play a bad game. Rarely do they put 3 games in a row that are good or 3 games in a row that are bad. So you never know what you're going to get. They're not that good at home, though. They do not defend. They do not defend the home court as well. So If you think here, there's a great spot here with Anthony Davis coming back, he'll be impactful with the limited minutes, I would look at the dog here in the Lakers.
To Mike's point, you look at this Mavericks team right now, 14 up and 14 down at home. On the road this year, 17 and 12. Lakers come in with an 18 and 10 road record so far. They've been outstanding in that sense, considering the injuries they've been dealing with. I want to quickly give you some numbers in terms of the impact that Anthony Davis has. The Lakers with Anthony Davis in the lineup, 17 and 6, a 74 win percentage. Without Anthony Davis in the lineup, 18 and 7. 17, just a 51 win percentage when he doesn't play. In those games that the Lakers are winning with AD in the lineup, they're outscoring their opponents by an average of 7 points per game. Without him in the lineup, just a point and a half. So he is an absolute difference maker, and especially with the defensive side as well, really not that much of an increase. They're still solid defensively, though.
You said before the show we were talking, you think he's the best overall player in the game, right?
Well, I think from a talent standpoint, LeBron's still probably the best player in the world, but I think Anthony Davis has the skill set that makes him the most difficult matchup. He can float out to the perimeter on the three-point shot. He can handle the basketball for a big man. He's good defensively. To me, he is a guy, if he could stay A, healthy, and B, push himself mentally to really get after it, like a Mamba mentality, play in Los Angeles, emulate the great Kobe Bryant, and get after it, I think he should be a league MVP contender every year.
I agree with you. It just, you got to get the whole full season out of him, right?
Yeah.
But that's the thing about all these guys. Embiid, I mean, it's very hard, it seems, in today's NBA for these guys to play. And we talk about 72 games. They used to play 82 games.
How about a prop bet on Luka Doncic tonight? Potential triple-double. Hasn't had one in his last 17 games. Lakers game, Luka tends to show out in some of the bigger games. This would be a spotlight game. Good opportunity for him.
That's tough. Go up against the Lakers, one of the top two defensive teams.
Well, he's only got to get 10 points. He should be able to get some offensive rebounds based on the way the Lakers defend. When we come back, the Palm Reader's Playbook is next. Let's see if Mike can stay hot. This is The Nuts. I'm Amal Shaw, Mike Palm alongside. Let's get into the Palm Reader's Playbook yesterday. Nice, picked up 3.6 units on the Padres yesterday. Padres game with the Brewers winning that one plus 180.
Yeah, we got there. We got the bases loaded in the bottom of the eighth, and we'll talk to Josh Towers about that. Padres strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. Couldn't put the ball in play. Let's talk about that impact a little bit later. Game that's underway right now. We played current league La Liga leader ATL Madrid, Atletico Madrid against Hauschka. This is 1-0 Madrid in the 64th minute right now. We played it under 2.5. You could catch it on that email from Bill 80 at 9 o'clock Pacific at noon at Eastern time. We like to give out a first period under almost every day here. Let's take a look at this tremendous matchup in the Central. Hurricanes Panthers, big game tonight. Expected to be Mrazek Bobrovsky. I took it at even money under 1.5. We've talked about how impactful Mrazek is for the Carolina team. He gives them a lot of minutes in goal, and he gives them a really steady effort every time out. Florida, very tough at home. Martingale, the Dodgers, here we go again. This is a rematch of the Friday night matchup from the Petco series last night where I had to sweat it out with Walker Buehler at minus 145. The scene shifts to Chavez Ravine tonight. He gets Weathers again. I'm not sure Weathers can have two great games against the Dodgers. I like Buehler here. We'll lay the 175. I'm going to play the Dodgers anyhow in the Martingale theory, but I like Buehler here at minus 175.
Yeah, we're going to get into the Padres a little bit more when Josh Towers joins us in about 5 minutes in terms of what's going on with this team right now. Mike, scuffling a little bit of 10 and 10, but I'm with you here. So this is where I agree with you, where I disagreed with you last time on Friday night with the Dodgers being only 145. Now at 175 at home with Buehler on the mound, I think this price is too low. Mm-hmm. I think this line should be closer to 190, almost $2. I think LA gets back on track. They're coming off a long road trip. They were in San Diego. They went to Seattle. Now you're at home. I think this is a great opportunity for them. This Padres team offensively with some challenges. Until they can get going in the right direction, I think this is a good opportunity for LA.
Well, isn't your opinion of the Padres different going into last Friday than it was after they lost 2-3 and then got swept by Milwaukee and they're not hitting the ball?
You know, Tatis, remember, was a pinch hitter in that one game the other night against Burns. Yesterday they struggled. Danielson Lamet only goes two innings. He hasn't pitched a ton of innings, so not really much of an opportunity for him. So for me, I haven't changed my perspective on them. I still think the Dodgers are the clear-cut team to win the division. But now the Padres are getting to a point where you're a little bit concerned about, hey, can this team be healthy? Are they going to be a contender? What's going to happen with them as the season continues to progress?
One other play I have in these four plays, all one unit today. I do have under in the Marlins-Giants game in the first five, under 4.5. Sanchez going for the Giants-Castano. I bet these games under first five every game when they played in Miami, like you had a game yesterday. Yeah. And now the scene shifts, an even tougher place to score in San Francisco. Sanchez has pitched well so far this year. But both these teams, not great offensively. I was surprised. I thought this would be a flat 4. It came back 4.5.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I thought that would be a 4.5. I actually thought we might see a 7.5 on the game
total. 8.5.
Was it 8.5?
It was 8.5 this
morning. Wow, I'm surprised by that number a little bit. Just because of San Francisco at night, something to keep in mind there. In the all-in segment, I've got one play today. Mike, I know you're surprised. I don't have multiple plays.
No, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah. I've got the Cleveland Indians here, -110 at home. I like them in this spot going up against a struggling Yankees team. Until the Yankees can show me some consistency, it's hard for me to start backing them right now in this matchup. Domingo Germán on the mound going up against Aaron Civale. Civale's gotten off to a good start so far. 2.18 earned run average in 20 innings pitched. Germán has struggled so far, Mike. 0-2 already in just 7 innings, and he's got a 9 ERA.
I love the price on this play.
Yeah,
I think Civale should be like 125 in this game, right?
But again, this is to me an example of the Yankees being priced or overpriced because they're the New York Yankees.
Yeah, we're still grading them like they're the presumptive favorite to win the American League here. I think that's the way in the National League with the Padres, how they're still overvalued. I like this play. And the other night, I give you credit. You said come back with Rondon off the no-hitter. And the White Sox won that game as well against Plesac.
Yeah, I think the Indians offensively, even though they did score some runs in that game, they will struggle throughout the course of the season. But I think the pitching matchup here appreciably favors the Tribe in this one. And Germán, until he shows us something, it's hard to back him in these spots. So for me, I'm going to be looking at taking fades against the Yankees because I think these are not prices you're going to get if the Yankees turn things around.
Jacob, put that board back up on this game. What's the run line on Cleveland here? If you think Germán is off, I wouldn't mind playing the Indians minus a run and a half in this
game.
Well,
the Indians are actually the dog on the run line here.
You can get them at William Hill minus a run and a half plus 180 because they're
a small
favorite. Yeah.
And, you know, you and I talk about this all the time. In the American League, there's an advantage of playing the run lines. When you look over the course of the season, the number of one-run wins a team has is not as great as maybe people think it is. You remember the ones where you lay the run line and you lose it. But the reality is there's a huge advantage from a fiscal standpoint of taking the run line here. I think this is a pretty good play here, taking a look at the Tribe plus 180 in this one. When we come back, more baseball on tap. Former big league pitcher Josh Towers is going to join us. What's going on with the Padres? What's wrong with his former team, the New York Yankees? And what about his former team, the Toronto Blue Jays? That's all next.
Sports betting action is just getting started, and our VSiN experts are covering early season baseball trends, NHL and NBA playoff races. Plus, we're looking at all the key picks and predictions for the NFL draft. We give you the tools that you need to make every bet, including our 24/7 video coverage, odds, and analysis for every game on VSiN.com. Our daily members-only best bet email from Bill 80, that's at 9 Pacific and noon Eastern, gives you every best bet from the host and the guests, and our in-depth coverage of every major event, and our digital magazine comes out every Wednesday on all point spread weekly. The weather and the betting action is heating up. Now is the time to sign up for your VSiN 10-day free trial, VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back into the Nuts. I'm Mike Palm. He's Amal Shah. Talk about experts at handicapping sports. We've got former Major League pitcher, World Series champion, former pitching coach for the New York Mets organization, and a great dad as well. Josh Towers joins the set. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, boy. Hey, you're being nice right there.
What?
I appreciate
that. The father thing is the best of all of it, I mentioned.
I thought that was
World Series champion. you get coaching your boys in that. I mean, it's a whole experience, right? You went through it, and now they're going through it in a different generation with a different mindset, and there's challenges there as well.
Yeah, we've had games the last 2 days it's crazy how stressful it is. Like, I've always, you know, watch him play and you get a little bit nervous, and then now I'm in the dugout when he pitches, and it's, yeah, I just want to take the ball and do it myself. It's easier that way.
Son's going to play at LMU.
Great, great. Congratulations.
Appreciate it. Yeah, I'm stoked about that.
All eyes on Chavez Ravine for the rematch, right?
Yes.
Padres-Dodgers. We get the same pitching matchup we got last Friday in Petco with Weathers and Buehler. We saw Buehler was $1.45, bet up to $1.55 last Friday. Only a 20-cent move opening here, $1.75 now. We've seen the Padres struggle. I have a lot of questions about the Padres. I'm really down on the Padres, Josh. This team, okay, I think they're poorly managed. I'm not a big Jace Tingler fan. I mean, he didn't manage as much as a checkbook before they gave him this head job in San Diego, right? He pitches Lamet. You're only going to get 4 or 5 out of Lamet. He gets the injury.
Four or five,
you got to get 7 innings out of your bullpen heading into a 4-game series with the Dodgers. And then bases loaded in the 8th, nobody out. They can't put the ball in play. I think they're afraid to make the playoffs at this point. But anyhow, you can react.
you gave me so much. Yeah, so I thought the same thing. I thought, obviously, Dylson Lamet can pitch, but anybody who bet them yesterday because he was back, you looked at it completely wrong because he was never going deep anyways, right? So that's a stretch as is. And maybe you liked him. The bullpen's good. The pitching overall has been good. I agree. I think there's a lot of pressure on a lot of teams when they're out choosing managers, and I don't know if all of them have necessarily chose their managers based off they feel this is the best person or the most educated baseball player that they want. I think there's other contributing factors. I haven't seen much out of Jace that makes me think that he's great, or that maybe he could be. They know him better than I do. People saw him manage and do stuff in winter leagues and stuff like that, so maybe there was something they saw. I don't know. I got a lot of studs. I got a lot of dudes who make a lot of money. I got a lot of big-name players. I still have to coach them. And we have a tendency to forget about that and kind of just let them do their own thing. And that's not the reality. We all have to have some sort of structure and coached, no matter if I'm Hosmer or Machado, whoever. I think that gets overlooked a little bit.
Is it harder for a manager like Tingler, who's younger with less experience, when he has to coach a team with a bunch of guys with $300 million salaries?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it depends on the person. But the more money you give me, the more I'm basically going to tell you to leave me alone. I mean, I've arrogantly done that in AAA 1 year when I was making money. I was failing, and I regret all my actions, but I was kind of the same way. And so you give somebody a lot of money, I don't have to listen as much. And the other thing is he has to earn their respect. I don't know if he has. I've never heard anything negative come out of that clubhouse at all. But being a player, knowing certain managers I've had over the years, it's basically like, are you done talking now? Are you done? Because no one's listening to you. And then there's other ones where you posture up when they come in and you have tremendous respect for them. So it depends on how he handles that clubhouse as well. It boils down to the offense. I mean, let's be honest about this. The pitching is leading the league in ERA overall. The whole staff, bullpen, starters, they're leading the league in ERA. So, I mean, they're doing something productive. They're not winning games at home, which is where they have to win, especially in that ballpark, especially with that pitching. So, struggling there. And then, again, you guys already know my whole Tatis thing. He's not ready for the big leagues. I don't care what anybody in the world says. He's not ready for the big leagues. That's a free out in that lineup and a liability at shortstop defensively right now. And then I'm putting more on Manny, who's actually been picking up the slack, who I respect. But, you know, Manny's, what is he, 270, 280 career hitter type guy, right? Yeah. So I'm not overly asking him to hit 340 or 350. And Hosmer, I like him a lot. He's not going to see a lot of pitches. So then now I have to structure that lineup based off of who's going to swing and who's going to take and how. So there's a lot more they need to do offensively that I don't think they're even come close to doing.
Well, like here's an example yesterday, right? They have Tatis and Kim in the lineup. You got to put Kim at short. I guess you can't because of the salaries, but my God, he's so much better at shortstop. And put Tatis at second base.
I fight this a lot at every level. It's a beautiful lineup, but we're trying to prevent runs, not give up runs, right? I don't know how many you expect this offense to score a game, but guess what? They're not scoring that many. And so we might want to prevent this amount of runs so that we can still have a chance to win just in case my off isn't there. So a lot of times our offenses, our lineups are predicated on offense, not defense. And so I agree. And then there's the other thing where in the major league level is a little bit different because these guys have positions they've been doing for a very long time. But sometimes we're afraid to move certain guys just based on, no, he always has to be there. The other thing for me is, what was wrong with Cronenworth hitting leadoff all the time? And then all of a sudden, he's hitting 3, whatever, getting on base, and I'm going to drop him down to the 5-6 hole, 7 hole? No thanks.
A lot of questions with them right now. You mentioned Tatis struggling. Just 6 hits and 45 at-bats to your point where you don't believe he's ready for the big
home runs?
I think he's got 1. Let me double check on that before I give you the exact answer. But I know he's been struggling so far this year overall.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the question is, do you think this is a potential team that you fade for the postseason because of where they're at in terms of offensively? They're just not getting it done.
No, because I think their pitching will always keep them in it. And the offense will come and go, and certain guys will come and go, and then they're going to find a lineup, hopefully, eventually, where they start trusting guys or trust, you know, leave him here and let him spark it or whatever the case. They have to get creative with that. But as far as the pitching, if the pitching can continue to do what they're doing, they're always going to have an opportunity to pitch in the postseason.
Two home runs right now.
And six hits.
Okay, we're about an eighth of the way through the season, 20 games in, 10-10. Does the pressure start to build and mount because of the expectations this year? But now you look up in the standings. It's going to take an incredible impact for this team to be able to catch the Dodgers in the regular season. I mean, now it's like, is this team going to be a postseason team?
Yeah, I mean, again, with the pitching, I think they are. They have to look in the mirror and see what the Dodgers are doing successfully at 14-4 and what they're not doing. And if they are trying to be the Dodgers without looking at why the Dodgers are who they are, then they're going to continue to fail. They cannot go out there and think the offense is going to carry them. It's not the reality. I don't care like how cool your name's on your team. That's not the reality with your lineup.
We're going to head to break.
Yep.
We're going to come back. We're going to talk about your former team, the New York Yankees, and then we're going to preview the American League West as well.
Sounds good.
We come back here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Josh Towers, former big league pitcher, joining us in studio. Won a World Series ring in 2009 with the Bronx Bombers. A-Rod, who's now owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves, won the MVP that year in the postseason. That's next. Boost and the largest offer of live in-play options. BetRivers Sportsbook is the industry leader when it comes to online sports betting. And to make your experience even more rewarding, BetRivers offers the most live streams of major sports, instant payouts, and only one-time playthrough. BetRivers, your hometown sportsbook. Offer valid in Colorado, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Virginia, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Available at PlaySugarHouse.com in New Jersey. Must be 21. Gambling problem? Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Indiana, 1-800-9 with it. Colorado, 1-800-522-4700. In Michigan, 1-800-270-7117. Virginia, 1-888-532-3500. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Welcome back into the Nuts. I'm Al Shaw, Mike Palman, joined in studio by Josh Towers, former big league pitcher.
You can find him on Twitter at NoDon'tJosh.
That's right.
Josh, let's talk about the Bronx Bombers, your former team, okay? They were the presumptive favorite to win the American League, second choice right behind the Dodgers to win the World Series this year. So far, not so good, right? We haven't gotten strong pitching performances. Kluber, no. You get Herman tonight. He hasn't been good, goes up against Savali. They're a feast or famine at the plate. They're not contact hitters. The Yankees still have a chance to win the East.
I mean, if the division wasn't so bad, I would say no. I mean, they're awful. I mean, listen, Baltimore's in third. That's not going to remain. Tampa, they've been inconsistent, but again, it's a long season with the way they play. Boston's playing well, and it's kind of exciting. I mean, again, I like what David Bush has done recently with the team as a whole, as a pitching staff. So hopefully, with the veteran presence in the coaching staff alone, they can continue that. So who knows? The Yankees should have been the team. The pitching's not the problem. I mean, the pitching's still doing well. The starters are doing okay for the most part. The bullpen's doing well. I think team ERA is somewhere around 3.5, slightly below. So it's not the end of the world, especially for the American League East. The problem is these guys can't hit. I don't know who's the hidden coach. I don't know who, if you have 17 of them or three of them or one of them. I don't know how many you guys got, but maybe they should listen to one voice, and it's a different one than they're listening to. We have seven guys in the lineup yesterday hitting 200 or less. Seven guys. I mean, listen, they're
hitting. That sounds like a Tigers lineup.
They're hitting 205 as a team, so just thank DJ LeMahieu for that, probably. Yeah. They're like four stolen bases. So, listen, I can't hit. I'm not stealing at all. Of course, we strike out a lot, but everybody does, so we'll offset that. They got 55 RBIs as a team. And they've scored, where are we at? 59 runs, which is third to last in all of baseball. It's something about New York because the Mets are leading the world in limited runs scored with only 52 or something like that. So Maybe it's New York and it's the pressure. These guys aren't, they can't handle it. But again, when you have seven dudes in your lineup and Gary Sanchez is the dude hitting 200 and the rest of them are hitting under, you got big time problems.
Let's talk about, you mentioned the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Here's why I think the Red Sox are interesting. Because the wild card is Sale. We don't know what you're going to get when Sale comes back. What sense do you have of what Sale can provide him this year?
Flip a coin. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know, you know, his name. I know where, you know, what he's done and how dominant he can be. I don't know the extent of his injuries and how slow he's taking his rehab or if he's rushing to come back. The more they win, the slower it can take. But I don't know, as a player in his status, making his money, he's going to control a lot of cards in that fate. So I don't know. It's tough with him. If he comes back healthy and he slows down the process, I think that it's going to be huge for that team. But if not, who knows? I mean, you want to rush him back and then he gets hurt. I mean, it's similar to Germán. I know he wasn't out because of injuries, but now being out for what he was out with the Yankees and now he's coming back. He was a stud before. Now he feels the pressure to be a stud again. But then again, I have to live up to being good because of what happened off distractions of getting me suspended and not on the team. And so there's a lot of pressure that he's living up to as well. So, I mean, again, like, the Yankees can't win. They can't score. You got a guy who I need to see do something before I can bet on him. I mean, if you don't trust the Tribe, this is a complete stay away game. Otherwise, I would have to favor Cleveland today just for many, many reasons.
I'm big on Savali. I think I think Savali is right there behind Bieber. I think he can be there. And I'm just impressed that this Cleveland organization keeps coming up with all these young pitchers.
They do. They develop well. They do. It's impressive. And then again, you have a Shane Bieber because you got rid of Kluber, who he kind of piggybacked off of a little bit. And now he's on the Jacob deGrom level of elite. And then these guys get to piggyback off of him. And again, going back to when I played, like, you should have saw all of the young guys, including myself, like, especially in spring training or the season, like, following Mussino around and wanting to be Mike in Baltimore, you know, and trying. And then in Toronto, like, you had Roy Halladay, so then everybody's following Roy and wanting to be Roy. And so when you have a Bieber, it kind of is contagious. Like, you see him dominating, you're like, listen, I got that in me. You get a little bit more excited.
No, you're going to say Dave Steve, but you're not that old. He was awesome, Dave
Steve. He was.
I love to watch that
pitch. Yeah, with all due respect to Dave Steve, I think Doc Holliday was a little bit better. Okay, right. We can discuss that another
tomato
time.
Tomato.
But they had it too. They had Clemens, had Henkin, had right. Steve. Right. Like, they had it as well.
Yeah. Good pitch. He was a guy. I liked him as a gamer. Let's go to out west. Mike Palm, a pseudo huge Oakland A's fan, president of the club here in Las Vegas of the Oakland A's. This team off to a terrific start now at 12-7. They've won 11 in a row. That's why we're talking about American League West. Has nothing to do with the other four teams. It's the fact that Mike Palm's Oakland A's are in first place.
Wait, weren't they 1-7 Oakland?
Yes, they were.
Yes, they were. That was a long time ago. That was the overreaction, Oakland A's. Yeah. I mean, again, what do you say? Like, they've been down this road. They've been successful for the last few years. They haven't changed their format. They haven't changed too many players or the way that they approach the game. And again, when you have people that have been there, whether it's a staff or whether it's players, and they're not as young as we think, they don't panic. It's 162 games. Like, last year, you would have panicked a little more. They're not. That's not who they are. They have faith in themselves. I mean, again, look at the third baseman who turned down that huge contract and he still hasn't got one yet. Like, if somebody doesn't believe in himself, it's that guy right there. So it's not fun the way they were losing the first week in the season. For them to whip off 11 in a row is kind of impressive as well. But again, that wasn't a team that I ever was overly worried about. Like, again, it's like, okay, overreaction early. Yeah, the Yankees, it's fair to be very nervous about. I don't think it was fair to be nervous about Oakland. But again, it was always going to be Oakland or Houston, right? Yep. Now Houston's got to figure something out.
Well, let's stay on that theme a little bit. Right now, when you look in the American League, three teams that are favorites to win their divisions, the Yankees in the East, the Twins in the Central, and the Astros in the West, all are sitting in last place. Do you see any value in potentially taking a shot at these teams to still win their division? Because the odds have changed now. You look at the Astros really struggling, 1-9 their last 10 games, just sitting at 7-10.
Again, it's funny because 1-5 at home. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where you're supposed to win, right? That's Houston, that is. I mean, that's where you're supposed to win. And we can, it's tougher with Houston because we can say all kinds of things. They've had some guys out offensively, but then again, we go back to when, you know, all the stuff they're cheating on. It's like, oh, they don't get to cheat now. They can't hit. And there's so many things that it's almost like every day if I were Houston, I would ignore the media every day. Just walk right by him. Just walk right by him. And eventually they're going to stop bothering me, you know? And it's such a long game that I can have a poor start like the Nationals did a couple years ago when they won the World Series. And it's okay. The pitching's still pretty good. Offensively, they have to figure some things out. And again, it goes back to San Diego for me. You can't just plug the same guys in the same spot every time, every year, and expect the same results. It doesn't. We all change, and I have to base it off of the team that I have and what if they're getting faster, they're getting slower, the added pieces. The structurally, it has to change a little bit. When it comes to Minnesota, I haven't really figured out. I don't get to watch them enough to know why they're losing. I still think they have a respectful team. I still think the White Sox are the team to beat in that division. Kansas City's running a high right now, but I can't emphasize enough how long 162 games is for the physical attributes and then the mental stamina, depending on how your team's built.
Boy, did I catch lightning in a bottle with Maeda last year, huh?
Love him.
It's tough now. He's not challenging hitters. You know, I talked to you watching him pitch this year. He's afraid to throw his fastball for a strike, and I think he's going to struggle this year. Talk to me about Corbin Burns and having 40 strikeouts and no walks through four starts.
Dude, I'm not gonna lie. When I saw his 40 Ks and no walks, I was like, I'm going to look at my stats real quick because I might have done that over the course of a whole season, right? I didn't walk anybody, but I was like, 40 strikeouts and no walks? Like, that's almost impossible. So you just said it with Maeda. You know, it's almost like he's not challenging anybody. It's, you're in a very special place, and we know Burns' stuff's good, but God, every team has multiple players whose stuff is elite. It's on a whole nother level of try to play catch with them, and you're like, no, I'm good. To have that kind of control where you're not walking anybody, I accidentally can walk you, right? Especially in the National League, when a pitcher comes up, you're like trying to just groove in, things change. And then to punch everybody out on the level of 40 punch-outs through where we're at in the season, he's got this confidence going. He's got finish to his stuff. He's got challenge. He's got it all going right now. And, you know, one little thing can disrupt that, and you'll see the confidence shake a little bit, which is overly impressive, even more for me, that he's able to do what he's done so far. I mean, I can accidentally have a bad inning, and he hasn't had – it's so impressive what he's doing. But, again, the for me to beat you consistently in the strike zone, knowing I'm going to challenge you in the strike zone, and I'm still getting ahead so I can bounce, opposed to bouncing before I get ahead, then it changes the whole dynamics of the at-bat. Like, he's doing everything right in the strike zone, and there's nothing they can do. He's in a special place right now.
Is he Cy Young good?
Oh, he's clearly right now he is.
He's plus 330. DeGrom's still the favorite at plus 220.
Jacob's so special. I mean, it's so, like, on one hand, it's like, just bet Jacob call today. On the other hand, it's like, all right, can he continue to do this? Well, yeah, he clearly is. Like, watching him pitch, I'm more and more impressed every time. It's going to take something very special like Burns to do it, but Burns also was a reliever. He's a starter. Now he's been a starter again. So now he's building that stamina. They won't let him pitch as deep as Jacob will. And will he be able to do it all year like we know Jacob can? It's tough, man. As of right now, yes, but 330 is not enough.
We have 45 seconds. You have a play for the folks out there today? Anything you like?
I mean, nothing I'm in love with. I did look at all the games a lot. Again, I don't mind fading the Yankees until they prove otherwise. I really don't.
I think it's the right price on Savali.
Yeah, I think right now, currently, I walked in at 110 maybe. Yep. Yeah.
That's my play for today is the Indians at minus 110 at home there. You mentioned it with Burns. I tend to agree with you. I think DeGrom is still right now on rarefied air in terms of what he is. Even Scherzer's not at that level. And his ability to take the ball every fifth day and go eight innings is unreal.
Listen again, what he does, and we all know they don't score for him. It's so impressive.
He's throwing 99, but he doesn't look like he's throwing 99, right? I mean, it's amazing.
He's in boxer shape. That's how good a shape his body is.
Mets right now, minus 14 run differential, but still 7-6 overall, but doing well. That's going to do it for us. Betting Across America is next.